heard there's from, Marion.
And there's Marion. Okay, so Wendy, as soon as you let me know that both Miriam and Karen are fully in the meeting, we can go ahead and begin.
They are all here.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and call to order our City Council meeting, a virtual meeting of Monday, October 19th, 2020 at 6 p.m. and welcome everyone and let you know that in compliance with the state and county's shelter at home orders, meetings are being held by teleconference only until further notice. So this meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is also available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the course of the meeting by calling at, area code 805-321-6639, and phone lines are open currently. So if we would, let's all join in a moment of silence, please, for those that you hold dear in your hearts that are no longer with us. Very good. Thank you for joining us in that moment of silence. Now, if you would all picture a flag and recite silently as I lead the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge of allegiance to the flag and to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. So now that we've done that, Madam City Clerk, a roll call, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well. So we do have a quorum and we will continue and proceed. And I'll just note there is a number of staff members on with us this evening, but probably none virtually as far away as our fire chief, Chief Lieberman, who we will hear from later in the meeting, but I believe he is joining us from Colorado. So the beauty of virtual meetings is you don't have to be in Grover Beach to attend this meeting. So, but with that, I will turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, for closed session announcements.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. On October the 5th, you met in closed session regarding a public employee performance evaluation consistent with Government Code 54957B1. Title was City Attorney, and there was nothing to report out at the end of that closed session.
Very good. Thank you for that report. So next, that will take us to our agenda review. Oh, and I'm learning that Desi is in Illinois, so we have dueling competing long-distance attendees this evening, so very good. So thank you for that closed session announcement, Mr. Hale. So that will take us to our agenda review, where at this time the City Council will review the order of business to be conducted today and receive requests or announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And we will, by motion, adopt the agenda as presented or as revised. So let's see if there's any member of the Council that needs or would like to have any changes to the agenda. Councilmember Bright or Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No changes, thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Lance. Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
No, I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as written.
I will second that. Okay.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we will proceed as published. And so that will take us to our ceremonial calendar this evening. And we do have several items tonight. We're sad to acknowledge this recognition of former Planning Commissioner Chair Carl Bloom as he completes his service as chair and as a participant on the Planning Commission. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I'm not sure if you had a chance to receive the proclamation, and if so, I was going to see if you would be willing to read that, since I think you probably served. Had an overlapping term with Mr. Bloom.
I did, and I am just getting to it.
Okay. We'll give you just a moment. And is
okay. I can just find it here. Here we go. Okay, thank you. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach to Carl Bloom in appreciation for his years of service on the Grover Beach Planning Commission. Whereas the Planning Commission is a 5-member board appointed by the City Council to review and make decisions on development applications, review and make recommendations to the City Council on development code amendments and general plan updates, and whereas Carl Bloom has been a member of the Grover Beach Planning Commission since his initial appointment by the City Council in August 2007 until resigning in June 2020, and whereas during his service on the Planning Commission, he served honorably as Vice Chair from March 2012 to August 2019 and Chair from August 2019 to June 2020, and whereas during his service on the Planning Commission, he was involved in updates to the land use, housing, conservation, and open space elements of the city's general plan, the adoption of the West Grand Avenue Master Plan, and Climate Action Plan, numerous updates to the development code, and approval of many development applications for a variety of projects. And whereas, as a member of the Planning Commission, Carl Bloom worked with the City Council and staff to implement the city's general plan, actively reviewed proposed development projects to ensure consistency with the city's adopted goals, policies, and development standards, listened to community input and considered all interests before making decisions on development applications, and whereas he has served honorably and diligently in his duties during his service on the Planning Commission, representing countless volunteer hours to the community of Grover Beach. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby recognize and commend Carl Bloom for 13 years of dedicated service on the Grover Beach Planning Commission and extends its thanks and gratitude for his role in ensuring a more vibrant community for our residents, businesses, and visitors.
Very good. Thank you very much for reading that. And I was looking through the participant list and not sure if Mr. Bloom was able to join us this evening.
I am here.
Oh, very good. Good evening, Carl. There you are, Carl. Yes, thanks. Carl, thank you. So if you want to take a moment to say any comments.
Sure. I just want to thank you all for allowing me to do this. I think it's part of what I believe in civic duty is important. And the fact that I could do this as long as I could was because of my family and because it was a supportive environment from the council to the commission to city government. And it's just great people to work with, and I'll miss working with you. Just my life got too busy, and you know how that is. but it's been great, and I'm looking forward to seeing that lodge digging some holes and watching that thing grow.
Very good. Yes, thank you for your service. So 13 years is a long time to serve your city, and we definitely appreciate all that and realize that if your life wasn't as busy as it was, we would look forward to trying to keep you going as long as you wanted to be here. So we appreciate that, and let's see if there's any other council members that want to add their thanks. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes, please. Well, Carl and I already spoke, so I already gave him the what for moving us. but yes, truly, well, you know how much we appreciate you and how much I appreciate all you've done. And we're really sorry to see you go, because you really have played a great part in the planning of this city and helping us move forward as we have. So we will miss you greatly, but we still know where you live and we have your phone number. So
right.
Don't think you're getting away from us. Really, we wish you all the luck and congratulations on your new appointment as principal. And so good luck to you there, and we'll see you around.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, I just want to thank you so much. You know, the people who are willing to step up and participate on these commissions are so incredibly important. It's so much work. And, you know, it's just the type of people that help everywhere in the community. Carl has been so helpful to my family. My daughter wanted to be a junior lifeguard in Avila, where he helps with that program, and she didn't know how to swim properly a lick. And I was telling her, you can't do it. He said, I'll get my daughter to teach her. She can do it. And darn it, she did do it. And she's been doing junior lifeguards now for 2 years, and she's surfing. And, you know, that's just so much a credit to you and all the work you do in the community. And I just want to thank you for everything you do.
Thanks, Miriam. Appreciate it.
Councilmember Lance.
Yeah, no.
Just echoing everybody's gratitude, it truly is a wonderful thing to have people step up and serve, especially for the tenure that you did. So thank you so much for your commitment to the city, and I wish you the best of luck in your next ventures.
Thank you.
Very good, and I will echo those sentiments as well, and wish you well. And we won't keep you too much longer because I see a football game in the back in the background there. But
it ain't the Steelers, so I don't care.
Understood. So, but I do understand we have Ann Holden, one of your compatriots, on the line as well. So let's see if Ann wanted to make any comments.
I don't really, but I will miss you, Carl. We've only known each other for a couple months, so it's great to hear how I didn't realize that you were on for 13 years. So congratulations to you in that and in what you're going off to do, your principal.
Thank you.
Very good.
Down,
thank you.
Hold down the fort.
Great. Thanks to you, everybody, for those comments. City Manager Bronson, I'm not sure if you wanted to add anything or if staff wanted to, from planning staff wanted to say anything.
Thank you, Mayor. I will defer to Bruce Buckingham, who has worked with Carl the most.
Good evening, everybody. Carl, what can I say? You've been a stalwart on the Planning Commission for many years. You showed tremendous leadership. You served as both chair and vice chair over the years and did an excellent job, and you were just instrumental in getting things done for the city, and really appreciate all of your effort and timeless dedication to the city, and remember how much you got paid for this job when you're retired.
Is that the defined benefit section of my retirement?
Thank you for your service, Carl.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. It was always a pleasure working with you.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Carl. Thank you to everyone
thank you
for those comments.
Very much.
Certainly. And as we say goodbye to Mr. Carl Bloom as a planning commissioner, this gets us an opportunity to move into the next item on our ceremonial calendar, which is an introduction of Commander Brian Millard by Police Chief Peters. Chief Peters, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Honorable Mayor, council members, and members of the Grover Beach community, I have the pleasure of introducing you to the newest police commander for the Grover Beach Police Department. Tonight, we are welcoming Commander Brian Millard to Grover Beach. Commander Millard joins our department with 20 years of local law enforcement experience. Commander Millard started his law enforcement career as a police officer for the city of Morro Bay. He rose through the ranks through his time in Morro Bay, to the position of Commander of the Morro Bay Police Department. In 2016, Commander Millard accepted the position as the police chief for the Cuesta College, where he organized their police department and helped them improve police and community relationships with the students and staff on both campuses throughout the county. Commander Millard's desire to return to municipal policing led him to applying to our recent opening after Commander Miller's retirement. The testing process was a very competitive testing process, and Commander Millard was chosen as our top candidate. He has a bachelor's degree from UCSB and a master's degree from Cal State University, Dominguez Hills. And I will turn it over to him as I welcome Commander Brian Millard to the community of Grover Beach.
Thank you, Chief Peters, and Honorable Mayor and Council, thank you so much for allowing me to be part of this community. I've known and admired and respected the work that Chief Peters has done for over 10 years, and it's an enormous privilege to still be part of the Central Coast and get to know a new part of it in Grover Beach. The picture in my background was taken last Friday, finishing out my second week during an early morning sunrise, and I can't think of a better way to start learning a community and being out in it. And I look forward to making many more memories and getting to know each of you. The Central Coast is an amazing place, and I'm just enormously thankful that we get to serve in a community like this one. And thank you very much. Very appreciative.
Thank you, Commander, for joining us. And it's always good to see someone hit the ground running. And the fact that I believe you sent out your first press release as a member of the Grover Beach Police Department on your very first day. So it's like I was talking with the city manager that afternoon and saw that your first press release had come out. It's like, well, he knows what he's doing. It's a great asset to the city. So looking forward to a long and successful career with Grover Beach Police Department. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mayor. And yes, Chief Peters explained very early on there would be no slack given for first day. So we're off and running very early on, and I want him to keep me on my toes. That's something I enjoy.
Very good. Thank you. Let's see if any member of the council has any introductory comments. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance.
Just welcome. Thank you for joining our community and wish you all the best as you continue to learn the community, and it seems like you're already enmeshed in it. So look forward to seeing you around.
Thank you.
And Councilmember Shaw.
Welcome. We're so glad you're here. As we're going to hear later in the night, I can't wait to see every single slot filled on our police department as it should be, and you are just such an awesome step in that direction, and we just couldn't be more excited. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Yes, hello. Nice to see you, and welcome aboard. I've heard great things about you, and so we're just so happy to have you with us. And I look forward to actually meeting you in person someday. So thank you for being here, and look forward to meeting you.
As do I. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that introduction, Chief. And Commander, welcome aboard. And unless there's any other comments that you want to make, Chief, we can close that ceremonial calendar item and move on to our next one.
That is all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. So next, we've said goodbye to Carl Bloom. We said hello to Commander Brian Millard. And now I want to pay tribute to a member of the community that we lost just a little over 10 years ago in Samantha or Sam Ford. And tonight I do want to pay tribute to the Sam Ford Memorial Commendation. It is a mayor's commendation in remembrance of Sam Ford and honoring the efforts of the Remembering Sam Ford benefit. And their mission is to fund pediatric cancer research and advances in treatment, and to empower cancer families and to improve the quality of life for children living with cancer through hospital play, music and arts programs. And so with that, I did want to introduce Donica Schmidt and Simone Lowry to accept the mayor's commendation and to say some words about Sam Ford and the Remembering Sam Ford benefits. So Simone, if you are there, go ahead and unmute, if you would please.
There we go. Yes, hi, I'm Simone Lowry. Thank you so much for having us and for the commendation. I'm really just here as a representative of the Studio Performing Arts. My wife Shannon and I have the dance studio kind of across the street from City Hall right there on 8th and Grand. And so Donica is actually a member of the board and is instrumental in putting our event together each year. So I'll let her kind of talk more about what the event is about. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Simone. So Donica, good evening.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here tonight with you. And thanks, Simone, for facilitating this. My name is Donica. I'm here because I was a friend of Samantha Ford when we were both the age of 13, and now I am 35. We went to Calder Middle School together, and we became good friends because we both danced together at the Studio Performing Arts. It was at this age in middle school that she was diagnosed for the first time with cancer, a rare form of bone cancer in her leg, and she had to make the decision to amputate. Within the year of her recovery, she was back at the studio dancing. It was really like therapy for her to build her strength back and to get back to doing what she loved to do. Her prosthetic leg did not slow her down at all. She continued to dance for the rest of her life. She was also an artist and a photographer and a performing arts teacher. Sam passed away in May of 2010 at the age of 24 after her third battle with cancer. She really left a mark on all of our hearts as friends. We remember her amazing strength and bravery. She never complained or was never put out about her situation. And she had the biggest, kindest heart and a deep, rich laugh that I will never forget. So to honor her, us group of friends as well as her family have started an annual Remembering Sam Ford fundraiser. Proceeds of the event create yearly scholarships in her name for young dancers at the Studio Performing Arts in Grover Beach. Since 2011, we have given 22 scholarships, and the money helps out for competition fees, classes, costumes. But another part of our event is that half of what we raise, we give to the Pavlov Foundation. And this is the foundation that funds pediatric cancer research and advances in treatment. They also educate and empower cancer families. And one of our favorite things about this foundation is that they improve the quality of life for the children, the families, and through play and music and arts program. So this year, every year it's usually held at the Branch Street Deli, but this year, moving to Zoom, it's going to be held on Saturday, November 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. And it's always fun-filled entertainment. We have live dance performances and music performances by local artists Natalie Lola and Shannon Lowry. And we'll also be holding an auction to raise money and accept donations. And all this information is on rememberingsamford.com. Thank you.
Thank you for that information. So rememberingsamford.com, a fundraiser on November the 7th, 3 to 5, and you can register for that at the website?
Yes, you can.
Very good. Thank you for keeping her memory alive and for doing the great research and the great fundraising to help with that research. So let's see, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, is there any comments that you wanted to make? And you are still muted.
Oh, my. No, just thank you so much for doing what you do. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, thank you. And we are looking forward to the event. Glad we will be able to access it on Zoom, and thank you for keeping her memory going.
Councilmember Lance.
Thank you for being here to accept this. She sounds like she was a really wonderful person. Sorry I didn't get to know her. As someone that grew up dancing as a child, I know how incredibly rewarding and comforting and just a special place it can be. So you're continuing that memory and providing scholarships to other dancers, because I was one of those dancers that received a scholarship, and it meant so much to me. It meant that I could keep dancing. So that's really great. And best of luck with your fundraising.
So Donica, Simone, thank you for being here this evening. So, and we will make sure that we get this commendation to you, and we'll look forward to joining you at the virtually at the event.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thanks, everyone.
So that will take us to our fourth item on our ceremonial calendar this evening, which is a proclamation for Red Ribbon Week. So, and I have asked Councilmember Lance if she would be willing to read the declaration. Hopefully you have it, you've received it.
Yes. Proclamation of the City Council of the City of River Beach declaring the week of October 23rd through October 31st, 2020 as Red Ribbon Week in the City of River Beach. Whereas tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use and abuse represents a serious public health and safety threat in our city, our county, California, and throughout the United States. And whereas it is important for communities, schools, and individuals throughout San Luis Obispo County to work together to eliminate the demand for these substances and to promote programs that support commitment to a healthy drug-free lifestyle. And whereas the Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd to 31st, 2020. And whereas parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during the observance. And whereas Red Ribbon Week highlights local substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local community coalitions and numerous countywide organizations, and also recognizes this year's theme, Be Happy, Be Brave, Be Drug Free. And whereas the City of River Beach further commits resources to help the success of the Red Ribbon Celebration and around tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention efforts, especially during these COVID-19 times. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of River Beach hereby supports October 23rd to 31st, 2020 as Red Ribbon Week and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention activities, making a visible commitment to healthy communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth, and encourages all community members to follow the Red Ribbon Pledge. No use of illegal drugs and no illegal use of legal drugs.
Thank you for reading that proclamation. So Chief Peters is here to receive it on behalf of the police department and the city. So Chief, do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Yes, Honorable Mayor and members of the council and community. Thank you very much for the proclamation. This is something we've been doing yearly, and generally in conjunction with our DARE program that we had in the schools until COVID, well, we all know what happened with COVID. So hopefully we can get back into the schools shortly after this goes past, and we can get back to seeing the kids and sharing our DARE program with them.
Very good. Thank you, Chief, for that. And maybe you can also take a moment. Just you have a very cool background in a pink patch behind you. Perhaps you can say a little bit about the pink patch program that the police department has done recently and in past years.
Yes, we, for the last 3 years, have partnered with the Hearst Cancer Resource Center in San Luis Obispo to raise money and awareness around breast cancer awareness and cancer awareness in general for the month of October. The month of October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and this originally started down in Irwindale, California, with the City of Hope Hospital and the police department there, where they designed pink patches on the police department uniform. And then they sold those patches, and the proceeds that were raised were donated to the hospital's cancer treatment center. So we brought that program up here 3 years ago, and our police department was the first one on the Central Coast to do the Pink Patch program. And in that 3 years' time, we have raised over $15,000 for the Hearst Cancer Resource Center. So if anybody wants to get one of these actual patches for yourself, come on down to the police department. And they are $10. And like I said, the proceeds are all donated to the Hearst Cancer Resource Center in San Luis Obispo.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. So let's see if any members of the council have any comments. Council Member Shaw.
Just thank you for all you all are doing. I know one year we're one of the top fundraisers in the state for this very worthy cause. And I just think on top of everything you all do, it's amazing. And yeah, hopefully getting back to the schools and being able to celebrate Red Ribbon Week would be an awesome goal. I know we have fun with it every year. So thank you.
Very good. And Council Member Lance.
Yes, thank you for promoting breast cancer awareness and being a part of that that fundraiser. I think is great. And also to echo Council Member Shaw, I hope we can get back into the schools with DARE. I still remember fourth grade DARE program. It's still embedded in my mind. Had a lasting impact on me. So it does mean a lot to
Very good. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
There we go. Thank you. I really can't say much more than my colleagues have already said, other than to thank you personally for all that you do. And the pink patches, I think, are just one more reason why our PD is so fabulous. And the Red Ribbon Week, I know when I was in school, we didn't have it. But when my children were in school, it was always a fun thing when I was part of the PTA to do. And unfortunately, my grandchildren won't be able to really experience it so much now. But when they're back in school, I know that they will. And I do know that it does make an impact. So hopefully we'll be able to get back to that soon. So thank you again for all that you do.
Thank you.
Very good. And I'll just echo those comments as well and say congratulations for all that you do, Chief. And we look forward to an update on all those activities a little bit later in the council agenda. So thank you very much. And that will conclude our ceremonial calendar for this evening. Thank you, everyone. We don't have any presentations tonight, but so that will take us to our public communications. So if there is any member of the public that wants to call in and make a public communications, please dial 805-321-6639. And during this time, the council will allow public communications with additional communications, if necessary, after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So let's check in with our City Clerk Sims and see if there's any members of the public that want to make a comment.
No, we currently have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public communications and bring it back to the council for the consent agenda, where we do have several routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. Let's see if there's any members of the council that have questions on our consent agenda. Council Member Lance.
Questions, thank you.
Very good. Council Member Shaw.
No questions, thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. I don't have any specific questions. I do have a comment on item number 10, but let's check in with our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on any item on the consent agenda.
We do not have anybody for comments, but we do have Paul Ashby and Associate Planner Janet Reese on the line. Should there be any questions for item 9?
Very good. Let's see if the council didn't have any specific questions, but now knowing that Ms. Reese and Mr. Ashby are on the line, let's see if there's any questions. Not seeing anybody. I just say thank you to both of them for being here. And I'll bring it back to the council for action. Who is prepared to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second, and my comment was going to be on item number 10, which was just that it is a continuation of our Measure K-14 program, and as identified in the staff report, we are significantly under the construction, the engineer's estimate with this. So this is a wonderful bidding environment for our Measure K-14 program, and I think this is a testament to staff's work and the bidding environment that we find ourselves in right now, that we're able to do these particular streets for an under budget scenario to where we can then reuse those funds for other projects. So with that, I will go ahead and ask the city clerk to, looks like this is a roll call vote.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we do have an approved consent agenda this evening. So thank you for that. So that will take us into our opportunity to change pages. And that is going to take us into our regular business tonight. And so if there is anyone who wants to make a comment on any items on our regular business calendar this evening, do call in at 805-321-6639, and I will go ahead and allow for public comments during those appropriate agenda items. So that takes us to item number 11, which is Central Coast Community Energy, a member agency update. City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Good evening. This is the first of three informational updates to the council this evening that are very timely and relevant to what we're doing as a community. This first item is the Central Coast Community Energy Member Agency Update. Just to tee it up, this is the first of our annual agency updates as part of our membership in what is now called 3CE. The council approved our membership when the agency was called Monterey Bay Community Power, but as you'll hear in a moment, it has since changed names to reflect the broader geography of its membership. And so this update has a particular relevance in that the customer enrollment will start in January. So we look forward to beginning this process and becoming not just a member, but actually being enrolled in the great programs under 3CE. I'm delighted to introduce J.R. Killigrew, the Director of Communications for 3CE, who will take us through our presentation this evening. J.R.?
Yes, thank you very much, City Manager Bronson. And it's great to be back with all of you. It was a little over a year ago where we came down and were able to present to you in person, but thanks to technology, we're able to reconnect with you again via Zoom. Again, as City Manager Bronson mentioned, my name is Jared Cougar. I'm the Director of Communications and Outreach. And yes, we are here today to more or less remind you about this agency and where it's come from now, but then also about the exciting enrollment that's coming out to the residents and businesses in Grover Beach. So next slide. Yes, and as City Manager Bronson mentioned, we are now 3CE, or Central Coast Community Energy. I would like to acknowledge that the great city of Grover Beach was the first city to take the plunge into joining 3CE last year when we were Monterey Bay Community Power, when you passed your resolution as well as your first reading of your ordinance last May, on May 20th. So you actually fast-charged the rest of the Central Coast to jump on board. And so our board actually reevaluated our name, and since we brought on 11 and actually 12 new communities to our agency, and now we're expanding the entire Central Coast, it made a lot more sense for us to change our name officially. So we're not doing business as. We actually changed our name with the Secretary of State, changed our name with our Joint Powers Authority Agreement. So now we are officially and formally Central Coast Community Energy. So check out our website at 3cenergy.org. I'm really, really excited the fact that we could bring in all these new communities and provide this resource and this program from Carpinteria all the way up to the northern part of Santa Cruz County. Next slide. So this is just a reminder for everybody, how does CCA work? CCA stands for Community Choice Aggregation, and it started back in 2002 with Assembly Bill 117, which allowed cities and counties to either create their own program or join in an existing program where the local government, the city or the county or the consortium of cities and counties actually go out to the wholesale market and procure energy on behalf of their residents and businesses. They are able to leverage the infrastructure and the billing operations of the investor-owned utility like PG&E or SCE. And then voila, you actually get the same service, but actually more competitive pricing moving forward. So we like to think about it as a partnership to support our shared customers, just driving more value for the residents and businesses of Grover Beach. Next slide. And so as you've heard already who we are a joint powers authority of now 33 cities and counties across the Central Coast. We started in with humble roots up in the Monterey Bay region when we were introduced to you last year with the 16 cities and the three counties in the Monterey Bay region. But it was actually the city of San Luis Obispo and the city of Morro Bay that had actually requested membership in late 2018 that actually jump-started a lot of our work connecting with community leaders, business leaders in the cities and counties across San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara. So fast forward to now, we have now 33 member agencies, and the most recent one was the city of Buellton. So effectively, we comprise a wonderful network of cities and counties, as I mentioned, across all five counties. The county of San Luis Obispo and the city of Atascadero are the only two that have decided not to move forward with us, but that doesn't mean we don't have a tremendous amount of value to derive to our 33 member agencies across the Central Coast. Next slide. In terms of our governance, this is what separates us from the previous investor-owned utility model, which is that vertically integrated model where, you know, those folks just go to the CPUC to set the rates. The community doesn't really have much input in terms of how are things done. That is drastically different when you engage in the community choice energy model. So we actually have three boards. Our policy board, which we are honored enough to have Mayor Jeff Lee as the representative for the South County cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach on the policy board. Those are of elected officials. On the operations board, we also have the great city manager, Matt Bronson, representing the same shared seat of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach. And also our community advisory council. Those are folks that meet on a regular basis to really learn about and engage about the type of efforts that we're reinvesting in the community. And I'd like to acknowledge Bruce Severance, who's a resident of Grover Beach. He's actually on our community advisory council and just had his first meeting a couple weeks ago. So really what the difference is we actually meet publicly 21 times to really kind of go through what we do operationally, how we source energy, how we reinvest in the community, how we set our rates. And all of those meetings are public, and all of those meetings are an opportunity for the community to learn how 3CE is serving the greater Central Coast. Next slide. I wanted to highlight some of the accomplishments, but there's been some really exciting news that came out that in my mind, actually, I would say would supersede some of these bullet points that we have. But 3CE actually was just awarded an A stable credit rating by S&P. That actually just came out on Friday. So we're actually the first community choice aggregation program that received an A rating from all of the credit rating agencies so far. So it's really a testament to our financial responsibility, our operational responsibility, as well as maintaining a high level of customers and making sure that we are reinvesting in the community strong. So it really is an accomplishment to all the agencies that are part of us, but then all of the work that we've done in the last 2.5 years since we started. So we're really looking forward to having this rating as an opportunity for us to unlock better contractual agreements that are going to drive more value for our customers. Next slide. I did want to highlight very quickly about our response to COVID-19. And fortunately, both Mayor Lee was on the board when this decision came through. We actually reduced all of our rates by 50% in May and June. that actually accounted for about $24 million in financial relief to all the customers who were enrolled at that time. That really was the most impactful COVID-19 response of any CCA to date. And it really was just an opportunity to show how collaborative and innovative our board is in responding to kind of very serious, serious issues that are affecting folks from all walks of life. Next slide. I did want to provide an update in terms of our energy procurement. Again, for folks who are tuning in, who are trying to figure out how does this all work? Well, actually, very much like the investor-owned utilities or, say, a municipal utility like the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, we actually go out to the wholesale market with a variety of requests for proposals based on different needs and requirements. We basically solicit the market and then negotiate the best prices that we can to deliver the cleanest energy we can on the grid. And so to date, we've actually contracted for a little over 450 megawatts of existing as well as new renewable resources, but then also almost 200 megawatts of battery storage. And those numbers probably don't resonate too much, but what that means is when all of these new contracts come online, that means we'll be able to meet 35% of our existing demand. But our board was really evaluating whether that was enough. And so I would like to move to the next slide. And that's where we land on, I think, one of the most exciting announcements we've had to date. We've actually set a course and a pathway that's been approved by our board to achieve 100% renewable by 2030 on a monthly basis from new renewable projects. That is the most aggressive and innovative approach to clean energy within the state of California. And we actually can do that more affordably than our current process of actually buying short-term renewable energy credits, buying large hydro attributes from the Pacific Northwest, bundling it all together. We actually have evaluated it, and it's more fiscally responsible for us to go out and contract for long-term contracts than it is in our current process. We're actually looking at investing more in electrification programs and evaluating how we can unlock the potential of distributed energy resources and storage within our service area to really optimize and monetize that, not only for us, but also our growing customer base. Next slide. And I did want to highlight one of the key opportunities that we have for residents and businesses in Grover Beach. Once everybody's enrolled in January, based on the type of customer you are, you potentially will have access to an energy program. An energy program, think of it like an opportunity, an incentive and a rebate, or an opportunity for you to get off fossil fuels. That's really what we're trying to do with this program, is to help electrify, reduce the consumption of fossil fuels, and make sure we do that reliably, affordably, and enhance resiliency. I did want to highlight two programs that are really exciting, that are new and engaging. One is a school bus electrification program. We've actually helped fund six no-cost school buses to school districts in our current service area. And we're actually partnering, hopefully, with the San Luis Obispo Air Pollution Control District to do something similar down in San Luis Obispo County as well. And also our electrification grants for new construction of new residential housing. We actually work with People's Self-Help Housing Group to build and support incentives for all electric affordable housing. So these are the type of ideas and opportunities that we're incentivizing and investing in the Central Coast. And as we move through the enrollment, we hope to kind of replicate and scale up these type of solutions so that we can really deploy these great opportunities across the Central Coast to really have some great impact on transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions and housing-related greenhouse gas emissions. Next slide. I did want to highlight very quickly about our uninterruptible power supply fund. This is another innovative solution that our board acted upon late last year that basically set aside about $25 million for low cost or low interest financing for backup supply critical facilities. So if you're a public school district, a public hospital, a public water wastewater district, or a city or a county, you have access to low cost financing to help, you know, put in backup supply at City Hall, at a library, community center, a hospital, or a school district. Next slide. Finally, we get to pivot to what you've hopefully been all waiting for, which is moving into the enrollment and what it means for the great city of Grover Beach. So Right now, you have about just shy of about 7,900 eligible accounts. And when we talk about accounts, those are individual residents or individual accounts related to businesses. So again, the majority of the customers in Grover Beach are residential customers, but we've got a little over 1,000 commercial accounts too. And that accounts to about 39 million kilowatt hours of consumption. So basically, to connect that back, we actually have to go out and procure for about 39 million kilowatt hours just for the city of Grover Beach, as well as the other communities that we're serving. Next slide. We've worked pretty tirelessly to develop this community enrollment plan, and we'd be very happy to share it with the city council tonight. We did want to summarize some of the key activities that are already underway to get us ready for this launch in 2021. So we are working to connect with the top 20 customers in Grover Beach. We're actually hosting a morning virtual breakfast with some of our large customers tomorrow morning. We also have staff that's working to engage with key stakeholder groups in Grover Beach, as well as contracting with a media buyer to help raise awareness through advertising. We have to send four mailers by law, but we're actually going to send additional letters to net energy metering customers. We've got a suite of digital resources, especially some videos. We've got our call center in Monterey, as well as we've scheduled three net energy metering enrollments. So if you have solar on your roof, you're a solar customer, we're going to be enrolling you in three different months over the course of 2021. And then we're really looking to collaborate with city staff in Grover Beach, as well as the other communities, to share out enrollment information through newsletters or social media and really just help collaborate on making sure that the enrollment is validated and that it be as successful as possible. Next slide. So just a reminder on our service offerings, when the enrollment happens, the virtual transition that happens in January, everyone will start with 3C Choice. That's a service offering that comes in at about 2% less than PG&E through our discount. And that has a renewable portfolio standard compliance of energy sources. And just a reminder, that will be 60% renewable by 2025 and 100% renewable by 2030. But if customers are looking to support 100% renewable energy now, they can do so with a small premium per month. Next slide. From a customer enrollment standpoint, outside of all the great outreach activity we're doing, we're sending a mailer, probably it's going to land the first week of November. So we'll be sure to share that what that notification is going to look like with city council, as well as the city manager. We will send another mailer in December. Then the virtual transition happens in January. There are about 20 different transition or bill periods that everybody's on. So at each bill period, that's when those customers are virtually enrolled. And we send another two enrollment notices, one in February and one in March. And again, anybody can opt out at any time. We highly encourage staff, or at least customers, if they want to opt out, do it in the enrollment period. But if it doesn't catch, if it doesn't catch you then, if you decide to opt out after March or sometime April, there's a small administrative fee for residential or commercial customers. But we like to think having five months to make a decision is a pretty good amount of time to be able to make the good decision for your home or business. Next slide. So this is just another snapshot on in terms of the enrollment timeline. So September and October have been very much kind of prep months, getting to know community organizations, business organizations, really kind of getting our feet wet in terms of virtual outreach. And then really November, December, January, February, March are really going to be the push for us to get out virtually and connect with our wide variety of customers that we're enrolling not only in Grover Beach, but the greater San Luis Obispo region, as well as Santa Barbara County. Next slide. And I'll just sum things up. Hopefully I've kept to the time that Mr. Bronson has asked me to speak to you tonight. Some of the key highlights, again, we have set up a satellite office in San Luis Obispo. So this was one of the great things that we did. And then we actually have three staff members that are based in San Luis Obispo. One actually is from in Oceano, the other one's from Atascadero. And then we have a staff member that's going to be moving to the region in the next few months. Another great thing was our pathway to 100% clean and renewable by 2030. That's a huge, huge step in the right direction in terms of reducing emissions affordably. And then also leveraging our Community Advisory Council for outreach around our programs, and then for our operations and policy board member communities that don't sit on our board. They now have a non-voting seat where they can enjoy and participate with the meetings and discuss items that are on the agenda. And then last but not least, just the fact that over the course of 2021, we're going to be enrolling a little over 130,000 customers across 11 communities. So we've been very active, but we still are internally grateful for Grover Beach's leadership in, you know, planting the flag in the ground and moving forward with joining this agency first and now serving on our board in the capacity that Mayor Lee and City Manager Bronson does. So happy to wrap things up and answer any questions from council if you have any.
Thank you, JR, for that that great presentation. It's as a member of the board, it is always admirable the level of professionalism, but the level of compassion and empathy that now 3CE has shown towards its customers and towards its energy procurement. So it does bode well for the company as a whole, as well as the opportunity that it provides for every member of the residential and the commercial businesses within Grover Beach. So, as JR mentioned, there is going to be a lot of activity coming in the next couple months, and I'm sure there may be questions that council members have with regards to that. So, let's see if Councilmember Lance, if you have any questions.
Thank you for the presentation. I actually don't have any questions. I think that there's going to be ample opportunities for people to learn about the transition from what you've presented. So hopefully people are checking their mail and if they have questions. Actually, one would be, is there, as far as the opting out, I assume there's kind of an online format that makes it easy for people, but also a call-in for our individuals that are not as internet friendly.
Yes, thank you, Councilmember Lance. Yeah, very easy. You can call the call center. One easy way to do it, you actually can email info@3ce.org to say, hey, I'd like to opt out. You'd still have to provide your address and your account number and we could process it there. But you also, we have an IVR or an online form that you can do. Just get your PG&E account number and your address, and you'll be able to do it there. And just for full transparency, it sometimes takes 1 to 2 bill cycles for us to be off the bill, because if you can imagine the entire back-end operation of PG&E, which is, it's not just a flick of a switch and then automatically we're gone. So if you catch it within the, like, right about 4 or 5 days after your billing cycle, you won't see us on your next one. But if it falls kind of in the middle of the bill, you may see us one more time. So just from a transparency standpoint, it's good for people to know that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, our discount is going to be 2%. So folks will be able to see some savings on a monthly basis.
Great. Thank you. I'm personally excited about it. And I hope that the majority of our residents are, as we do prioritize environmental sustainability and in our community. So thank you.
You're on mute, Mr. Mayor.
And I was just saying that Councilmember Shaw was muted when I'm still muted. So, Miriam, any questions?
Yeah, just a couple. Thank you. It was a very thorough presentation. I was interested in the part where you could, if you wanted to, be 100% renewable. And I was wondering, will that be an opt-in at that time? Or how will that work?
Yeah, thank you, Councilmember Shaw. Yes, so that is our voluntary service offering. So again, and it's strictly, I just want to be clear, it's supporting. We go out and procure, you know, a whole network of different energy. And at the end of the day, if somebody wants to say, hey, I support 100% renewable energy now, they can do that voluntarily. So they could go on our website or email us or call our call center. And then basically that customer would pay 0.8 cents more, and they would just know that they were supporting, you know, 100% renewable energy from the get-go.
Cool. And then I guess my other question is, we've thought for a long time about getting solar. We've been waiting to redo our roof. So is for people who do have solar, how will things be different from how it is now with PG&E, or will there be a difference?
Yes, there will be a difference. So first and foremost, we take over the generation side of the bill. So what happens is that it forces a true up. So everybody, when they get their interconnection with their solar on their roof, they have that interconnection date. So 12 months from that date, they have a true up. So what happens is if when you enroll in a community choice program, all of those customers have to be reconciled from an accounting standpoint with PG&E. So what we do is we set up, you know, three different enrollment months, which look to be April of 2021, July of 2021, and October of 2021. And then we try to batch all the customers who enroll or have their true up around those months, so you have the least amount of impact. So from a transparency standpoint, there could be some customers that it's better off that they opt out because they could be adversely impacted by that true up. Our call center can help you with that. And again, we just want you to have the best experience with the enrollment. But if it just doesn't work for that particular year, then you can opt out and then you can re-enroll when it works better for you. The benefit from our program is we actually do reconcile. We will be moving towards a monthly reconciliation. So instead of folks just not paying anything every month and then getting a bill once a year, you kind of reconcile whether you owe us on a monthly basis. But we do end up paying out more than PG&E would under their kind of annual true-up system. So again, from a blanket statement, is it better or worse or indifferent? It ultimately comes down to each customer. And that's why, you know, we certainly encourage those customers to reach out to our call center and kind of walk through their bill and figure out what's best for them. But we certainly encourage anybody who has current solar to really look at SGIP, which is the Self-Generation Incentive Project. We want to move away just from having solar to battery storage. It's really critical as we go through these public safety power shutoffs or even these flexi-works where the grids had to shut down due to a myriad of reasons. You really need to have backup supply to help keep the lights on, the refrigerator going. So when the grid goes down, if you just have a solar system, that will go down too, and it won't be producing anything. So it's something to consider moving forward that we really are hoping to kind of catalyze and support greater adoption of battery storage, not only help the customers, but also help the greater grid.
Okay, and just one question. You know, we've read a lot about this, and I feel very educated on it with your presentations, but I know when you were maybe trying to take this to our county, one comment that I heard made was, well, I just trust PG&E more. Like I've been dealing with them longer. So what would you say to some of our residents that if they feel apprehensive or they feel, what would you say to that so that they can feel as comfortable as I feel with it?
Well, that's a wonderful question, Councilmember Shaw. Great thing is they can still trust PG&E because PG&E still handles the billing and the delivery. It's not like their entire business model has been taking over. It's just the generation side of the bill. The other thing to remember is that PG&E is not the grid. SCE is not the grid. We're not the grid. We are just participants that work with the California Independent Systems Operator. Basically, that may already get too high level. But the point is like there's a myriad of partners and players that make the grid work. And it's not just PG&E or SCE. It's all of the load serving entities. So basically what they're getting is they're getting the reliability and the safety of PG&E maintaining the infrastructure for whatever it's worth. They get the reliability and the consistency of the billing still comes from PG&E. And now they have a community-based public agency that's beholden to its customers and a much more transparent, visible, and public process that's actually being able to go out, and it has an incentive to get the best possible product at the best possible price for their customer. Whereas the investor-owned utilities, they're basically, they're beholden to shareholders and they're guaranteed a rate of recovery. We're not guaranteed a rate of recovery. If a customer leaves, it leaves. We have no, you know, power charge and difference adjustment to levy on customers. So basically, they get the best of both worlds. They get access to a program and an agency that's really trying to drive value for its customers, and it just gets the reliability, historical presence, of PG&E. Whereas if they didn't have us, they didn't have us coming to town, ultimately they wouldn't have any access. They would just be sent a bill and they would just have to go on business as usual and just get that type of, you know, that type of system where now they have access, control, and you have someone like Mayor Jeff Lee on their board or City Manager Bronson on the board. And, you know, and having someone like Derek Johnson, who sits on the board seat that represents Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, and Paso Robles. So what you get is more access to community members and more opportunities to provide your voice at the table.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. And they can call you, Mayor Lee, when they have questions. So thank you. That was informative. That's all my questions.
And I have received a number of those phone calls, and hopefully I've represented the 3CE well. But let's see, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, do you have any questions?
Thank you. That was an excellent presentation. Thank you very much. I don't have very many. One question is, should our county or Atascadero decide that they would like to become part of this program? Is there any reason that they wouldn't be able to?
No. Thank you. Sorry, Vice Mayor Bright. I mean, our door is open. So.
Okay, so that's not an issue. I mean, anytime that they felt that they, anytime they saw the light or whatever, then they would be able to join us. Yes.
Okay. Yes. As you've already gone through the process, Vice Mayor Bright, we have a resolution and two readings of the ordinance, and then that membership request would be presented to our policy board for consideration.
Okay. Terrific. And then I just have one other question. Now I don't profess to understand much of this, but as I understand it, that some production of electricity does take fossil fuel. So for 3CE to go to produce electricity, then you would not use any type of production of electricity that would use fossil fuel. Is that correct?
Thank you, Vice Mayor Bright. So. The easiest way to explain it is all load-serving entities, whether it's us, PG&E, SCE, we go out and contract for whatever kind of power supply that we want to say that makes up our power mix, okay? That's not done on an hourly basis or even a monthly basis. It's done on an annual basis. So what happens is effectively on a daily basis, we have to be transparent about this, there's anywhere from 30 to 50% natural gas. On a daily basis, if you go to the California Independent Systems Operator, there are natural gas plants running 24/7, 365 days a year. So there's no way to get around that. So the point is our approach to getting to 100% clean and renewable energy, the goal is to that on a monthly basis, we look at how much energy our customers consume versus how much we put on a grid on the grid, and that is the account balance. So there's no way to say we don't go out and contract for natural gas individually or nuclear or coal, but that doesn't mean it's not on the grid ensuring reliability or ensuring that folks can have their lights on. We just go out and basically put onto the grid what works for our board and our customers. How the CAISO kind of balances that out with the fleet of natural gas plants is their business. So it's a little more nuanced, like the idea of saying, I get this and not this. It just doesn't work like that. It's more about what your agency or your load serving entity is putting on the grid on your behalf, as opposed to being able to say, I'm getting 100% of X at every single second of the day. I hope that clears things up. It doesn't, because then it's like, well, I now have a whole bunch of other questions. But the whole point of us moving towards 100% clean and renewable by 2030 is that tells the customer that whatever I consume on a monthly basis, we're going to match that with renewable energy on the grid, not on an hourly or a daily basis, but on a monthly basis.
Okay.
Well, I'll kind of mull that over.
Okay.
I think those are my questions at this time. Thank you.
And thank you for all those questions. Perhaps Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I can kind of use the Zone 3 analogy as from a water standpoint as a similar analogy as I understand it. And Mr. Killebrew, thank you for the explanation. And tell me if I go awry here, but there are times of the year where this Zone 3 water line does carry state water. And so there are times, even though we don't contract for state water, we're actually drinking components of state water because it happens to be in the line. We are still paying for and effectively contracting for Zone 3 water, but there are times where we're drinking state water. We're in a similar situation. We're contracting for clean renewable energies, but because of other energies, electrons coming through the system, we may be actually receiving those, but it's offset by the amount of clean renewable energies that are in the overall system. So hopefully that makes that a little bit more closer to home as you've been our Zone 3 representative on occasion. So hopefully that makes it clearer. So with that, JR, I don't have any specific questions, but do thank you for the presentation. So let's see if there is any member of the public that wants to speak on this item. City Clerk Sims, do we have any member of the public?
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and bring it back to the council, see if there's any last comments or questions that anybody wants to make for Mr. Killebrew. So not seeing anybody unmute, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Bronson, see if he wants to close this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Killegrew, for your presentation. Really appreciate the work that you've done and that 3CE has done in delivering value and doing so in a financially responsible way. The rating that you mentioned at the beginning doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen very, very frequently. And so that is a testament to financial stability of your agency, our agency, and now it's going from a concept to a reality beginning in January. And so to the council's information, we are going to be working closely with 3CE to help get information out to our community using our social media platforms, our website, our communication networks. So you'll see a lot of information coming from us in November, December to get our community ready and aware of what's happening beginning in January. And stressing, this is clean energy, locally controlled, and helping to support our local economies. So with that, thank you, Council, for your good questions. And thank you, Mr. Killegrew, again, for your great work in helping to shepherd this over the last year and a half.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bronson, and to the Council. It was great to be here with you tonight, and we look forward to working with you.
Very good. Likewise, and this is a culmination of a council goal that started approximately 18 months ago with a number of people coming to our council goal setting workshop and convincing the council and the city to enter into discussions. And Mr. Killegrew and 3CE came forward and showed us the benefits of this. And we look forward to participating and having it culminate on January 1st with actual participation and enrollment. Very good. So we'll go ahead and close that item and move us on to item number 12, which is our public safety update, where we do have Police Chief Peters and Fire Chief Lieberman here to give presentations. So I think I will have Police Chief Peters provide the presentation first, unless you guys have flipped a coin and Chief Lieberman has decided to go first.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, if I can just jump in just to help maybe set up the item. Actually, this will be a joint presentation. We have one slide deck, and Chief Peters will be actually providing the first set of slides. But just to set it up for the council, it's been about a year since we had both chiefs make a presentation to the council updating you all on key activities and highlights of their respective agencies. So we felt it was timely to bring back another item. And just to stress that public safety is one of our major city goals, and these two departments comprise roughly half of our general fund budget. which is very common among cities and really reflects the priority the council has long placed on public safety within our community. I'm very proud of the work of our police and fire departments and what they have done, and the work of our two chiefs in helping to lead their efforts. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Peters to get started, and perhaps after his slides, we can take a pause and just see if there are any questions from the council before turning over to Chief Lieberman. Chief Peters, the floor is yours.
Thank you, City Manager Bronson, and Honorable Mayor and members of the council and community. I'm pleased to present to you tonight the public safety update from the police department and with my partner chief, Steve Lieberman, and the fire department. So we'll just go ahead and get started. So far, 2020 has been a very busy year for us. The police department has handled or is on track to handle 21,000 calls again this year. But with the council's support and the community support and the additional funding, we've seen some progress on hiring some of the vacancies that we have. Right now, your police department has 21 full-time sworn officers and 2 part-time sworn officers, as well as 9 professional staff members that handle the records and dispatch duties before the department. In January of 2020, we had 6 police officer vacancies. We had an aggressive recruitment effort, and we had a competitive salary and benefit schedule that the council had given us, and that helped to fill some of the vacancies, quite a bit of the vacancies, actually. We only have 2 vacancies currently in the police officer rank. Also this year, we experienced several retirements. If you would go to the next slide, please. These retirements were 3 employees that retired: Commander Sim Miller, Dispatcher Nan Pennick, and the Administrative Assistant Executive to the Chief of Police, Laura Vintage. All of them retired, and they took 71 years of service and from their time here in Grover Beach and on the Central Coast. So we lost a lot of good experience. However, in the next slide, please, we did hire 7 new employees. And you met one earlier tonight, Commander Brian Millard, who brought 20 years of local law enforcement experience to the department, as well as many officers and dispatchers that we've brought on board. Again, 2020 has not been without any challenge, many challenges. But if you go to the next slide, please. One of the biggest challenges we had was COVID-19, and I know the fire chief will explain how his department handled this and how we're all living through it every day. But the police department, we really started to watch and track the COVID-19 in late January, early February, and when it started to become more known to the United States. And we reached out to our counterparts across the country and saw how other agencies were dealing with COVID-19. That resulted in us preparing our staff probably pretty early on in the process. We ordered a lot of additional PPE, personal protective equipment, such as face masks, sanitation, cleaning supplies, stuff like that. We also developed new policies and procedures, things that we didn't really have a whole lot of in the past for a pandemic, although we had some basic policies regarding how to deal with pandemics. The policies that we had to come up with were very new on how to deal with pandemics while still doing public safety out in the field. We revamped a lot of our procedures, and our department was one of the first departments to actually mandate the wearing of face masks while out on patrol and contacting members of the public. And we joined on board with the community of Grover Beach, and we got this. Grover Beach Together, the hashtag symbol. We absolutely support everybody in the community. I think we've done a great job community-wide. And so we're making some strides on COVID-19. Next slide, please. Additionally, we saw the challenges of protests come across the country. And this was as a result of a very unfortunate incident in Minneapolis, where Mr. George Floyd was killed by a police officer who obviously didn't follow the law or any procedures that he was taught. And as a result, many people voiced their opinions and their displeasure with that, as they should have. And Grover Beach was not immune to that. We did have a protest here that was about 300 to 400 people right on the Rio Grande line, right there in Grover, Rio Grande line, in the intersection of Oak Park and Grand Avenue. Our police department coordinated with the protesters, and we had actually two different groups protesting on either side of the agenda. And we were able to coordinate that protest safely and have a peaceful protest, a real true peaceful protest, not a protest that you saw in some of the larger cities where things got out of hand. I think that was due to the coordination that we had with our staff and the organizers, and our staff being on site with the protesters and engaging them in conversations during the protest, actually outlining what was acceptable and how we can help support them get their message out. And as a result, it was successful. There were no injuries, no arrests, no damage to anybody's property. So that we can count as a success. The protest also led to another group of community discussions, and that's the hashtag 8CantWait campaign. That came out shortly thereafter the protest, and we jumped on board, took a look at what the 8CantWait campaign was about, and we put together our policies and procedures in reference to these requested actions by the 8CantWait campaign. And what we found out was that our policies and procedures pretty much already provided everything that they had requested. In some cases, our policies and procedures went even further than what they had requested. So we were pretty proud that our policies are already in line with what's being requested in police reform. Additionally, we had started the discussions about the use of the carotid hold. As soon as the 8CantWait campaign came out, we were already reviewing our policies, and that was one of them that I immediately suspended the use of in our department. The use of that has since been banned by legislation and is no longer going to be allowed. So our department policies and training programs are being updated to reflect that. Next slide, please. Overall, the results of the investment that the community has made and the council has made has helped with officer productivity. Obviously, more officers on the street, we're going to increase productivity. 12% increase in productivity so far this year. You may have seen recently in the Slow Tribune that Grover Beach was fortunate to experience the largest reduction in violent crime in 2019, that 54% reduction. That is due to the hard work and dedication of the police officers and staff that are out there working every day. We also saw, so far to date, this year to date, a 16% reduction in Part 1 crimes, with the biggest reductions coming in property crimes, which is 55% in burglary and 33% in auto theft. And those are ones that can affect everybody. When your house gets broken into, or your business gets broken into, or even if your vehicle is stolen from your driveway. We have made a big dent in those this year. We've also seen, with more officers, we see more traffic enforcement. There's been a 15% reduction in traffic collisions so far this year. And so we're making the roads safer because the officers are out there doing more. We've also seen, as a result of a recent ordinance that we passed, a 38% reduction in false burglary alarms. If you'll remember back, I believe it was October of last year, we passed a false alarm ordinance, and it was had a lot of topics of discussion on if it was needed or not. But what we have found is so far this year, it's reduced false alarm calls by 38%. And we're pleased with that, because that means that's more time for officers to be out doing traffic control and patrols. Next slide, please. This slide is a great example of community support. This has all been occurring during the COVID. And I wish I had more slides to put on, but I got to leave some room for the fire department's presentation. So, but this is just a prime example of people coming in almost daily, supporting the officers and supporting the staff that are working, you know, 24 hours a day. They've brought in cookies and pizzas and hosted lunches and dinners for the staff, and we're extremely appreciative of the community support that we get in Grover Beach. It is by far the largest support in the county, in my opinion. And I know that our motto is committed to our community, and I know our community is committed to their public safety. Next slide, please. Future challenges. As we discussed in last year's presentation, we had some future challenges, which we were able to meet several of those. But the future challenges that we're looking at in the next coming year are regionalizing Emergency Communications Center. We're currently, Pismo Beach Police Department is providing the nighttime dispatching of our city for police officers. Those hours are from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then our staff takes over from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. We are exploring a contract option with the Pismo Beach Police Department to regionalize our communications staff with their staff at their facility. And in general, that is going to create a safer environment for the officers and the communities, because you'll have the cities located in one room sharing information much faster than it can be shared over radios or over emails. So we're working with Pismo Beach on that, and there is a strong possibility that Arroyo Grande will come into those discussions as well in the future. One of the other items is to increase the sworn staff into our recommended 2018 audit levels. That was the recommendation of outside consultants that came in and stated that our department at the level of activity was experiencing back in 2018, which has not decreased here in 2020, we should have 23 officers for that level of activity. We're close. We have 21 now, and with some more investment from the community and from the council, I'm sure we will get there, and we will be able to make even bigger strides in community and public safety. Another future challenge is retention of employees. It's a competitive process. Employees tend to make choices based on what they can afford and where they're working and how they can afford the living arrangements. So maintaining our competitive advantage that we have built up now will be important well into the future. And then just a final one, that's something to look at. I know we always talk about facilities within the city and maintaining those, but the police department was built in 1981, and it has seen better days, even though a new recent $100,000 remodel really helped out the inside. We've actually outgrown it. So it's a 5,000 square foot facility that 32 people are working out of right now. But that's something in the future, years to come, that could be a priority for council. So again, that's my presentation. I want to thank the council and the community for your support for the police department. And I will go ahead and open it up for any questions.
Very good, Chief. Thank you for that presentation. So that was nicely done, a nice overview of that. Let's see if there's questions from the council. Let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. First of all, yes, excellent presentation. Appreciate all that information, and really a lot of very good news. I, for one, am incredibly proud of our police department, and you being the head of that, I want to thank you so much for all that you do, and the officers that work alongside of you. So really, I only have one question, and that's regarding the dispatcher vacancies. I'm just wondering about that. There were two according to the report, two in January 2020, and now there's two vacancies again. Why is that such a hard position to fill and keep filled?
Yeah, the dispatcher positions is a very, very stressful position. Not only you're talking about shift work, but you're also talking about they're answering thousands of calls a year. In fact, our dispatch center brings in over 30,000 phone calls a year, with over 5,000 of them being 911 related emergencies. So it's a lot of stress that the employees are under. And the resources are, when you only have one person in there at night working, it can be extremely stressful and things can get missed. That's why we're looking at the regionalizing concept with Pismo Beach, where you will actually have more people in the dispatch center and hope that you can alleviate some of that stress.
I see. Okay, well, that makes sense now. Okay, thank you very much.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Shaw, see if she has any questions.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. It's so exciting to see the direction we're moving in. I learned a few things about the department this summer that I think you didn't share in the presentation, but I think would be great to share. There was an article in the Tribune just about how much diversity we have in our police force, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, the Grove Beach Police Department has had a tradition of being probably one of the most culturally diverse departments on the Central Coast. It was recognized by the Tribune, I think back in 2014 or 15, as well as recently in the last year. We have a diversity of our department matches or exceeds the diversity of our community. Our community has about 32-33% Hispanic population. Our department has about 44% Hispanic population. We have multiple bilingual officers now on the department. When I first started here in 2006, we only had two. And so now we have several on multiple shifts throughout the department and in our dispatch center. We also have five women that now work in the police officer ranks. When I first started here, that was only one. So over the years, we've actually been able to attract and get some great female candidates to come on board, and they've been doing an excellent job for us. As you saw, Nalita Aceves was promoted to sergeant this year, so earlier on this year. So we're really proud of what we've been able to build, and we're proud that we match the demographics of our community and that we are one with our community. So that's our commitment to them.
Thank you. And I also learned, in addition, I know way back when body cameras started being worn, I think we were maybe the first department in the county, but can you talk about how we keep extra body cameras on hand?
Yes, we started the body camera program over 10 years ago now. We were the first department to fully deploy body cameras in the field. Back then, because it was a new technology, it was very expensive. We only had 8 body cameras. Over the years, we've made some investments utilizing grant funding and so forth. And now we have we had 103 body cameras on hand. So we have plenty of spares to go around. These devices, they do break. It's a tough job environment, and so they tend to break after a while, or the batteries are dead. But we were fortunate this last year to purchase about 80 more body cameras from agencies that had switched their programming to different systems, and they found their brand new body cameras they had purchased were no longer usable on their system. So instead of spending what would have been about $30,000, I think we spent $5,000 and we got all the body cameras. So every officer on the department is issued a body camera, and it's required to be worn while out making public contacts and required to be activated in every public contact.
Thank you. Yes, that's awesome. And the other thing I think people would want to know about is the computer program you have that's kind of new, that tracks maybe when officers not just have a use of force, but a display of force, and kind of the computer system you use to track those type of things.
Yeah, the computer system is called IA Pro. It's a advanced computer system. I think we're only the Sheriff's Department and us are using it right now in this county, but it's very widely used across the country. What it does is it allows us to track the officer's performance in the field, whether it be involving a pursuit, a use of force incident, or a show of force incident. If they have to draw a taser and point it at somebody, that's a whole different category than actually if they had deployed that taser. So what it does allow us to do is track that officer's performance to see a early detection system is built into it that if there are any issues where we need to increase the officer's training or increase the officer's abilities by additional equipment, it does help us recognize that early on. And as a result, we've inputted all the data for the last 5 years. And as a result of that, we actually have a very good program going forward.
Well, thank you. Those were all my questions. I just really wanted people to know about these things that we're doing, a small and mighty department. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. Good questions. And let's see if Councilmember Lance has any questions.
Thank you for that presentation, Chief Peters. I think Councilmember Shaw requested a lot of additional really insightful. So thank you for that. I am just impressed by the progress that we've made, especially in recruitment. I think that's one of the biggest things for me from the outside looking in on what you've done with the department. So I'm really excited about that. And just kind of going to the Dispatch Regional Center proposition, I've just generally over the last year watching the department just been really impressed with the regional collaboration too among police agencies in our five cities area. So thank you for that leadership, and I look forward to seeing what the Beach Police officers continue to do. I think you've made this a really great safe place to live and be, and thank you for all the information. And yes, I'll say that.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the additional staffing as well that we're bringing on. We have three people in the various hiring stages right now that hopefully by 2021 we can say that we were fully staffed.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. So just had one quick question as a kind of a follow-up or a building question on what Councilmember Shaw was saying with regards to body cameras. But I know the community has put an investment in the, I'll call it the blue light intersection cameras and in the public spaces. So what benefits do you think the community has and the police force has been able to use or garner from through the use of those cameras? So, and how has that helped your ability to police?
Yeah, we started the community camera program about 8 years ago in partnership with the SLO Regional Transit Authority. The first set of cameras were put at Ramona Park, and then we expanded that network through grant funding onto Grand Avenue, and most recently through the budget process and through the council's direction, we expanded those into four city parks. And we're looking at doing all the city parks eventually as funding allows. But so we have right now over 50 cameras around town. Those cameras have been involved in solving crimes. In fact, the last three homicides that we've had, the cameras have been instrumental in actually tracking the suspect, identifying them, and helping us to or effect that arrest and put them in jail. So I could say that the camera program has been very successful. It also helps with the simple crimes too of hit and run, traffic collision investigations, and stuff like that. So the officers utilize those cameras virtually on a daily basis when they're doing investigations. They can go back and look up footage and determine where that investigation will go from there.
Very good. I definitely appreciate that update on the cameras and all the good information that you provided just on what the police department is doing and where we intend to be in the next foreseeable future. So, with that, thank you, Chief. We'll kind of close the police department update and turn it over to your counterpart, Chief Lieberman, for an update on the Five Cities Fire Authority.
Well, good evening, Council. I'm Steve Lieberman, your fire chief, coming to you from the city of Loveland, Colorado. I think some of what I'm going to share with you tonight is very timely given my current assignment in a whole nother state and with very similar situations. So thank you, Chief Peters. You did a great job. You set the bar really high. I'm heading into hour 14 of today, so it's a stretch assignment to keep up with you, so great job. Again, I just wanted to bring you up to speed with what's going on with Five Cities Fire and how the year 2020 that's impacted all of us, I'll go out on a limb, in a negative fashion, to some extent has also impacted the fire department and how we're dealing with the effects of 2020. So if you could go to the next slide, please. So I want to start with a huge, momentous milestone in the history of the Five Cities Fire Authority. This year, 2020, was our 10-year anniversary. So just 10 years ago, three cities with three different fire departments entered into a joint powers agreement and launched the Five Cities Fire Authority to create a more efficient service delivery model, consistent training, boundary drops at the nearest crew, with the appropriate training would respond to that call for service regardless of where the station was or where the rig was. So sadly, given the pandemic, we couldn't have our big celebration to celebrate our 10-year anniversary, but I do want to make sure I acknowledge that and remind our community that this model is alive, well, and working. Next slide, please. So, state of the organization, just briefly. The organization is strong and remains mission capable. As you'll see in the coming slides, we've been very busy supporting the state through all the effects of COVID and fires throughout California while still managing to provide excellent service to our communities. The JPA, the Joint Powers Agreement, is basically the defining contract of our three community partnership. And with recent conversations in communities, and perhaps you remember Oceano's attempt to raise additional revenues to pay for their professional fire service in a ballot measure that lost by 9 votes, the managers have come together and with the support of the board members and the city councils and district board have entered into a third amendment to the JPA, which has defined work programs. One of those is a detailed financial analysis, which has been initiated. I'll be contacting Ms. Purcell and Mike Stevens and Aurora Grandy to really nail down. We believe we need one full work day to really hammer out a lot of this work and deliverables. We're also going to take a quick look at alternate service delivery models that have been discussed off and on for several years. But just again, Five Cities Fire is in great shape. We appreciate the support of everyone in the community, and we're getting the job done. Next slide. So sharing some results of investment from our member communities, you know, the city of Grover Beach, along with our partners, saw the need to support the eventual evolution away from a volunteer fire department and the last vestige of those employees is our part-time reserve firefighter program. While we still have three positions open and it's being filled by two employees who are excellent employees, we need to guarantee consistent service delivery. So with added investment from the member communities, we hired three firefighters in July of 19. Thankfully, they've all done really well through their 12-month probation, and firefighters Ross and Lane and Hunt, while they're looking pretty tough, are really nice people, and they're on the floor running calls and supporting all of us. Next slide. So Chief Peters already took care of this, but I just want to talk about two of the most significant events of 2020 that's impacted public safety. Next slide, please. So again, you've already heard, we knew about COVID-19. We knew it was overseas, but public safety, we have to do a lot of contingency planning. We have to anticipate the worst and hope for the best. And early on, we started researching what the pandemic was doing in terms of spread, what epidemiology was showing as far as how it was transferred from patient to patient, and how we were going to protect our communities, but more importantly, in the short term, how we're going to protect our first responders so they could continue to run those calls to take care of people that were sick and support them as best as possible. Again, engaging early with our member communities and talking about business continuity. How does governance continue? How does a city operate with an assumed absentee rate of 30%? Those were all numbers that we used in pandemic planning for the swine flu. Again, really sitting down with staff and talking about how would we manage basic functions with a significant percentage of the employee base sick or their family members sick, and talked about things like working remotely. So if you just think how quickly we've become accustomed to virtual meetings like this, employees working from home and City Hall being closed, this was all formulated and implemented in a very short period of time. And I hope you'll agree with me that basic city functions continue to be delivered today, even though staff really had a hustle to figure out some solutions and implement them in short order. Again, coming back to employee safety, how are we going to contact patients in a safe way to care for them, but to protect those responders, whether it's law enforcement or fire? The acquisition of personal protective equipment, and then doing things that a fire department never does. Our lobbies are always open. We always want to take families through an apparatus bay and show them fire engines and have them talk to firefighters, but we close the lobby and we cease public education because we had to create bubbles of safety for those first responder crews within the environment of the fire station. And we need to protect the community as well should one of our folks be exposed. Next slide. So our crews, just like Chief Peters said, mandatory masking policies, things we never considered would be something we would worry about. All employees are masked. The photo on the right, well, it's a silly foot post by one of our firefighters, was a public education campaign to explain to the community why our firefighters weren't going to look like that image on the left. They were going to look like someone you would see in an emergency room because it was donning all that additional personal protective equipment and taking additional steps. For example, if someone's sick in their home, you'll likely see that three-person crew make entry into your home. With the pandemic, we basically designated one employee to make initial and primary patient contact. Another employee was 6 to 10 feet away, recording patient information. And we tried to keep people as far away as a potentially exposed patient as possible, including if the patient was ambulatory and able to move, asking them to come outside of their house before we made contact with them. Next slide. So there's a pandemic. We're changing the way we do business. Employees are working remotely. We're trying to get things done, but business as usual continues. There's been a lot of work, and I can share information with you based on my current assignment, that we still need to accomplish all of these tasks, whether it's a wildland fire incident or a structure fire, but we have to adapt for the pandemic and the huge challenges in how we do that. Next slide. And then we transition to fire season, and I'm calling it part one because part two is still to come. And when I refer to part two, I refer to Southern California. Traditionally, fire season starts in the northern part of the state due to weather conditions that create lightning strike fires. Later in the year, in the fall, autumn, October, November is when wind events in Southern California begin. They're known as Santa Ana winds, or in Santa Barbara, they're known as sundowner winds, and they cause significant risk of fire. So you need to start with that baseline. The impact to our climate has created a drought environment that we're suffering from. And when the conditions are hot and dry, the vegetation is going to die and dry out. So you've got a lot of fuel in these areas. And if you see the result of the thousands of lightning strikes we had in August, you had multiple catastrophic fires burning at the same time. If you look at the map in the middle, that is as of August 24th, those were all active fires in the state of California. Fire chiefs, every year we smile and say, who's going on TV to announce that this could be the worst fire season in California history? This is the worst fire season in California history, and other states in the western region of our country are all saying the same thing. So people will say, well, what's it all about? And I'm going to say it's a combination of fuels. It's a combination of the climate, and also there's a factor of people want to live in a more rural setting, kind of away from suburbia, and government is allowing people to build homes in these areas that present significant wildfire risks. Next slide. So that list of fires are just a fraction of what was on that map in the last slide, but these are all incidents that Five Cities Fire Authority personnel have responded to in part one of the fire season. The Apple Fire was in Southern California, the Lake Fire was in Southern California, but everything else was in Northern California. Whether it's an engine company, as you see on the left, or our specially trained single resource folks, such as engineer Joe Farnsworth, pictured here, he's known as a heavy equipment boss. He is tasked with managing and overseeing multiple pieces of contract heavy equipment, whether it's doing fire line breaks, removing fallen trees or trees that are at risk of falling and hurting firefighters, or going back in after the fire suppression has taken place to do repairs to the wilderness area. All of our folks have been very busy this year. I was deployed for the first time as part of a national area command team to the August complex, which was, well, remains the largest fire in California history at well over 1 million acres. And the area command team, there's one of three in the country, and they're really deployed for any disaster, whether it's a hurricane or tornado or an act of terror, domestic terrorism. The August complex required a team such as this one because there were so many resources that were constrained. There were multiple incident management teams trying to manage that fire, and this team comes in to mitigate any conflicts among the management teams, and we have to work with them to set priorities as to which part of the fire is going to get those very few and precious resources. Try to coordinate communication, take care of government issues, VIP visits, messaging, all of those things. And I'm sitting here in Colorado. I never thought I would be in Colorado during a fire season, but I'm in Colorado because we are. This team is currently assigned to manage 7 active fires in Colorado. People have lost their homes. Thankfully, at this point, I know of no fatalities. And this hotel that I'm staying at is filled with evacuees and their pets, and people are very stressed out and concerned, obviously, about their homes and their belongings. The fires here, it's something that a Californian can't understand. The temperatures are in the 30s for most of the day, but that vegetation is dry, just like what we see in California. And the wind patterns in Colorado, because of the Rocky Mountains, can produce winds that are in excess of 60 miles per hour. So while the weather might be chilly, once there's a source of ignition with dry vegetation, these fires are still burning and growing. The last bullet, just briefly, just reflects how constrained the state of California was with all of these incidents, in that the county fire chief approached a couple of us and asked if he could basically rent engine companies to stay and fill his fire stations, because county fire is really Cal Fire, and Cal Fire has both a local and a state mission, and a lot of those state resources are going to leave the county whenever they're needed, which is going to drop available resources to remain to protect San Luis Obispo County. So for 6 weeks, we had fire engine crews at both Station 23, which is the Cal Fire headquarters station on Santa Rosa in San Luis Obispo, and at Station 20 in Nipomo. Our folks were de facto Cal Fire employees. And just to remind the council, all of the responses for this fire season, including me being out of state, are fully reimbursable to our member communities. But just wanted to share that this is never anything any of us have seen as far as the resources. I still have an engineer in Northern California, and we haven't seen him in over 60 days. Next slide. So again, just California is fortunate in that we have a master mutual aid system that was developed after catastrophic situations in Southern California wildfires. And it's based on the premise that there is no fire department that's actually big enough to take care of their own constituency and their own service areas. And fire departments have adopted common terminology, common basic training levels, common definitions of resources. You know, what is a type 1 fire engine versus a type 3 fire engine? And when I request a type 1 fire engine, I should get a type 1 fire engine with certain staffing, pump capacity, ladders, hose, all of those things. So we've really developed a fine system to move our people around and support other communities. You know, whether it's COVID-19 and the stress it's causing on all of us and our families and our employees, the fire season has put a strain on our employees. Whether they're deployed multiple times to multiple incidents or they're on duty for extended periods at that fire station to cover for those employees who have left the county. I can tell you that even incident management teams are timing out. They usually will come in to work an incident for 14 to perhaps a maximum of 21 days, and which time they should be replaced by another team. But there's a lot of fatigue in the system, even here in Colorado, where teams are timing out and other teams are not available to come in behind them. So I think we've pushed the system to the limits this season, and we're just hoping, especially in California, as the Northern California fires are starting to settle down a bit, that folks can rest and rejuvenate for what lays ahead of us potentially, this in part two, where we've had fires burning through Christmas. Next slide. Quickly, response data for 2019. This shows the three communities. If you look at the left, you'll see Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano. And in the different colored blocks, we have different call types. If you look to the far right in the goldenrod section, you'll see total service calls by community, with Grover Beach at over 1,000 calls, or representing almost 31% of total call volume. I do want to share that COVID had a distinct impact to calls for service. Once the stay-at-home order, shelter-at-home order was implemented, our calls for service actually decreased because families were home together, able to care for one another. Also, traffic volumes were very low. Chief Peters will tell you that the CHP was very active in enforcement because while the freeways were less cluttered, people were speeding more. So with fewer vehicles on the street and more people at home taking care of their families, our call volume actually dropped a bit. But since the shelter at home orders have been relaxed, our call volume is returning back to normal levels. Next slide, please. So you haven't seen this vehicle yet, fully grant funded and also received supported by private donations. This is called a utility task vehicle. It was custom fabricated, excuse me, to serve communities such as Grover Beach. So it's four-wheel drive. It carries a crew of four. That big tank on the right picture on the left side is actually a compressed foam system. So the theory behind this vehicle is it will be quickly deployed by trailer. Let's just say there's a dunes fire, and that vehicle can drive into the fire where typically you would have hand tools only and kind of knock down the forward progress of the fire until more resources can arrive. You can see the Stokes litter on the right side. If you imagine someone having a medical emergency in the boardwalk area, currently our crews have to jog in there and then carry the person out. We'll be able to transport the patient, even providing patient care through this vehicle. So very exciting, $38,000 project with no cost to the communities. The vehicle will be dedicated shortly. The private donation came from the family of Slow Stringer, Matthew Frank, who was a prolific public safety photographer and journalist. His parents made a sizable donation in Matthew's name. As his mother said, Matthew would think this was a cool project. So there will be signage on the vehicle dedicated to Matthew's memory and his commitment to public safety. Next slide. That brings me to the questions or comments section. Again, I appreciate it. I thank you for your support to Five Cities Fire. This council has been very supportive of us through the years and through the challenges. And I think we're in a much better place and we're just gonna keep doing what we're doing. Very supportive councils and board and even the manager's working group. We get a lot done together. I'll stop there and say thank you and see if there's any questions.
Very good, Chief. Thank you for that presentation. Let's see, again, getting some feedback there. So, okay, thank you for that presentation. Very well, example of both great departments working together with different challenges, sometimes unique, sometimes similar to each other. But the fact that the Five Cities Fire Authority is 10 years old is a great pause, and now proverbially get back to work dealing with fires. So we thank you for your service and locally, as well as up in the August complex and now in Colorado. So with that, I'll see if Mayor Pro Tem Bright has any questions for you.
Thank you, Chief. That was an excellent presentation, and I'm very proud that we've had Five Cities Fire Authority for 10 years. It doesn't seem that long to me. It probably does to you. I am just so pleased with the way that your department has come along, and just all that you do in our community. And well, I have a personal affinity for the fire department because they've just been so great to my family in times when we needed them at the most, but also just how you put your life on the line. And I know that our community feels the same way. So thank you so much for all that you do. I did, though, have a question. It's really an insignificant question, but it is something that I was curious about. And it's under the calls for service. If you could just define or tell me what is a hazardous condition and what is public service? What types of calls are those?
That's a great question, and thank you for your kind of words, by the way. So a hazardous condition could be anything from what we would call officially a hazardous materials response, but it could be as simple as a lot of times we're called because there's a vehicle on the public right-of-way that there's fluids all over the place, or there's a gasoline spill, or something short of a fire would fall into the hazardous conditions.
I see.
Public service, you know, people really look at public service and say, man, that's a big percentage of what you do. And it's a very interesting item when you consider what that means. And a lot of it is, in a lot of ways, you can consider part of the job of the fire department has been that catch-all, right? So you see police. They're not just police officers anymore. They're social workers and marriage and family counselors. And we're just trying to pick up what's left to help our communities as best we can. So public assist is going to be something as simple as one of our elderly residents waking up from a nap and they're on prescribed blood thinners and they stand up too quickly and they get lightheaded and they faint and fall and hit their head on the ground. While it may be one of those things where you think we're just going to go put them back in their chair, we actually have to do a medical assessment to make sure they didn't hurt themselves. A couple, one's been discharged from the hospital or a doctor's appointment, they pull up to their home and their partner doesn't have the strength or ability to get them back in the house. And their kids don't live in the neighborhood. That's a public assist. We will go and get those people situated again because there's no one else to do it.
Right.
A lot of that is public service. Beeping smoke detectors would fall into that category. Flooding in a home, someone's plumbing breaks, or there's an accidental commercial fire sprinkler discharge and their home is flooding. We will go and do what we can to mitigate the flooding. Our guys are very handy with ladders and vinyl tarps at making chutes to get water outside of a home. But again, those are just a few examples of what public service is.
I see. Okay, well that kind of covers what I was wondering. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very good. Next we'll go to Councilmember Lance, see if she has any questions.
Thank you. Again, thank you for that presentation. Here has been incredibly challenging for our public safety, police, and fire.
I flew over Colorado the other day, and I saw from the sky how insane fires there are. So I can only imagine for you there. I guess I just hope that the minimization in calls in our local area due to people being home is hopefully created less of a strain so that, you know, our personnel can go and help where help is needed. So obviously we don't want to lose you in our community, but it's where it is. So hopefully that's balanced out a little bit for you guys. I would only hope. But I can just continue to thank you for you and all the employees of Five Cities Fire for what you've done for our community, but also just for the state and the country, really. So thank you. And I don't have any specific questions.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Pretty good. That'll take us to Councilmember Shaw. Let's see if she has any questions.
I don't know if it's a question. I really thank you for everything you've been doing this year. I know at one point when we were very early on in COVID and none of us knew what was safe, what wasn't safe, and I happened to drive by a crew that was had to go into someone's home and help them. And they were all gearing up. And, you know, I think a lot of times we think of our firefighters as running into a burning building, but with COVID, running into a home when you don't know what to expect has become just as dangerous. So my goodness, just thank you and stay safe on that. And I was really happy to see the Dunes vehicle because I know there was a pretty significant fire in the dunes earlier. The months are running together. I guess it was the summer. We could see it from our porch, and it was scary. And I had never seen something like that before. I didn't really realize that so close to the ocean, you could have a fire. I always looked at that vegetation as very, the succulents, I didn't think they would burn like that. So I'm thankful for the new vehicle, and I definitely witnessed the need for it. So yeah, those would be my comments. But yeah, just thank you and stay safe.
Thank you.
Very good. So again, I appreciate the presentation, and just had one question. More of a confirmation, I think, can anticipate the level of service that our anyone who's back at home is providing to the communities. But with all of the firefighters that are out and about and being utilized in other areas, can you just kind of touch briefly, Chief, on the local coverage for fires and for incidents locally? To make sure that our residents and the communities that Five Cities Fire Authority serves are still getting top-notch service from our firefighters.
Certainly, and if I could go back and touch on COVID with some additional information, I'd appreciate that as well. I just want to tell you, you know, in terms of Five Cities Fire Authority staff currently, with the exception of Engineer Silva, who's still up north as a heavy equipment boss, and myself, all the other employees have been recovered or are back at work or home with their families. I do want to say when things like this start to happen and resources are leaving the county, the fire chiefs have an excellent working relationship. And as something as simple as a conference call or a group text message, we can pull each other to see what we're capable of doing. And at the very minimum, we will all extend what we call our IA or initial attack area, which truly means we will just automatically drive into someone else's jurisdictions to run calls for them, just knowing how thin the county is getting. So again, I think our county is excellent relationships and very well prepared to cover for one another, at least until such time that resources can come from another place to assist us should there be a large event. But again, Five Cities Fire Authority is right at capacity and able to serve our communities.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that. So, and then you said you wanted to add something about COVID.
Yeah, if I could just, just talk about COVID and, you know, it's my usual speech to anyone that will listen to me about us not becoming complacent and taking care of ourselves at home or with our families. I've been delegated the title of COVID cop on my area command team, and I've implemented screening criteria, which has not always been popular, but is being followed because we, can you imagine an incident command team, not out of arrogance, we'll pick any incident command team, they are command and control for a large incident. Can you imagine if they got sick, right? And we're already strained for replacement teams. Can you imagine if one got sick? So we've got efforts in place, and just about every fire camp has measures in place. But I will tell you, the Cameron Peak Fire, which is the largest in Colorado history, there's over 100 firefighters either isolated or quarantined right now because COVID showed up on that fire. So it can happen, and it's going to continue to happen no matter how vigilant we may be. But again, it's just a great reminder for us all to be cautious and remain vigilant. Thank you.
Very good. I definitely appreciate that. So let's check in with City Clerk Sims just to make sure. I haven't heard that we have anybody on the line, but let's confirm if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council, and see if just by a show of a quick hand, if anybody has any last minute comments or questions for either of the chiefs. Seeing no one raise their hand, I will say thank you to both chiefs for your presentations this evening, for your updates. We look forward to continuing our partnerships with an agency and a department. And as we continue through our budget process, we look forward to kind of growing the public safety infrastructure within the city so that we can provide the best service possible to all of our residents and our businesses. So thank you for all that you do, and please send our appreciations along to your staffs as well.
Thank you. We will.
Thank you.
Very good. So that will conclude our public safety update. And just a quick question of the council to see if we've got one more regular business item. But if anybody needs a break, just go ahead and do a quick wave. Seeing no waves, we will go ahead and power through. And this will bring us to our parks and recreation and holiday activities update. So unless Mr. Bronson has a quick introduction, we'll go directly to Ms. Petker. So Mr. Bronson or Ms. Petker?
I'll just say briefly that we've started off with clean energy, talked about public safety, and now going to recreation and holiday activities. As they say, parks make life better, and we are continuing to do that, just doing it differently, virtually, this year. And so I wanted to have Kathy Petker be able to provide some highlights to the council of things that we're doing now and are coming forward as part of our holiday activities. So, Kathy, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Matt. And next slide, please. Can you hear me?
We can. There does seem to be a fan or some background noise, but yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I wanted to introduce the recreation coordinator, Madison Ototorana. She is also on the call with us, and she will be doing some of the presentation as well. But I'm going to go ahead and kick it off, and wanted to start with the fact that our department has typically offered a lot of recreation and programs and concerts, and since COVID has come, we've been unable to do that, as well as our park rentals and facility rentals. So since that time, we've had to cancel and modify and create all of these new modifications. Next slide. And we have pivoted and we've adapted to mainly virtual recreation and outdoor classes. And we have done some indoor classes with the programming of 9 students and 10, including the instructor, which is the regulation. And we have been able to also offer physically distance with face masks as practical. And this picture on the right is our roller skating class that's happening at Ramona on Wednesday nights. And we've been getting lots of positive feedback on how it's going. And this is being taught by a mother and daughter. And it's already full. And we do have a waiting list for the next session. Next, please. And here's the other classes we have going. We have the scooter skateboarding happening with the YMCA. We also have yoga in the Ramona Park, and we also have Tai Chi. And Tai Chi is another class that is has another waiting list as well. It's that time of when we all need to be centered, and people are signing up for that. We've been really happy with the registration and the participation in our outdoor classes. Next, please. Another great new happening is our free Wi-Fi in our city parks. We've been so fortunate to partner with the police department and Peak Wi-Fi, and to be able to provide online learning opportunities for students in the CMR, and be able to do their homework at the park if needed, and be online as well as play in the park and use our big grassy open spaces. And it is happening at Grover Heights Park and 16th Street Park. And an email has been sent to all the CMR families through the district. And we are really fortunate to be able to have this partnership. And thank you with the police department's cameras and Peak Wi-Fi's donation of the internet access. Next slide, please. And I'm going to talk about the first virtual event we have going on, and then I'm going to turn it over to Madison for the next three. So we are pivoting to virtual pumpkin carving and decorating contest. As you all may recall, our in-person event has always been very popular with lots of partners, including the Rotary Club, who is still going to actually partner and sponsor this year's virtual event. And then this will be something where we want people to decorate and or carve their pumpkins and take a picture and post it on our city Facebook page, and we will share it. And then the Rotary Club will still be judging for the winners, and we have prizes to hand out, so it will be a lot of fun. So we just want to remind everyone in the public watching to please participate in our virtual recreation programs. And then I'll let Madison talk about the next three events. Next slide, please. And she can.
Hi, everyone. I'm Madison. Hope everyone can hear me okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so yes, a lot of the month of October, it's filled with a lot of prizes and Halloween fun. We decided to do something in addition to the pumpkin carving, add a little bit of extra. We will be having our first Halloween house decorating contest. Everyone's encouraged to submit a photo and or video of your decorated house, front porch, lawn, any kind of decorations of your home to Grover Beach Parks at so our website, or email us. And that will be due by October 29th. Reason behind that, there will be three winners chosen for the contest, and it's a family-style gift basket. So we're encouraging everyone on Halloween. It'll be kind of a G-rated scary movie with a combination of donations and city gift cards. It'll also be a Grover Beach pizza in that gift basket. So a little family movie night will be the winners of those. Yes, so next slide. And then we're doing something extra special this year. For the month of October, we're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving. So perfect year to do this, especially in times like now. It's important, and we want everyone to reflect on what they're thankful for. And for that, once they tell us what they're thankful for, they might just be another reason to be thankful. We will be selecting three winners. Everyone will submit what they're thankful for on Facebook and make sure they tag the city of Grover Beach, or they're welcome to email us as well. And we will be sharing kind of anonymously on Facebook and our website. And it is important to add, I don't know if Kathy touched on this too, all house decorating and pumpkin decoration will be displayed on Facebook as well. So everyone will kind of get a shout out and be wowed. But the grand winner of this Thanksgiving dinner, so it'll be a random draw. The winner from the grand drawing will receive a 4-person full Thanksgiving meal. This will be announced on the 25th. And the remainder of the 2nd and 3rd place winners will receive a Thanksgiving dessert from our Grover Beach Vaughns. And that is for our Thanksgiving. Yes, thank you. And lastly, this kind of mimics kind of what we're doing for Halloween. This is more so bragging rights. So it's a contest to earn bragging rights within your community and within your neighborhood. You're welcome to nominate yourself, your neighbor, or a business owner. And we will pick a winner for each of the categories for each residential and business on the 17th. And we're working on certificates and just bragging rights mainly. So, and that pretty much concludes what we're virtually doing this year. I'm hoping next year will take place in in-person events and I can be a part of that as this is my first. I started in March. So, yes, looking forward to an event in person and we can go from there. But I'll give it back to you, Kathy.
Thank you, Madison. And that concludes our presentation. We're open for any questions or comments.
Very good. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Madison. And Madison, as she mentioned, started work for the city in March. Quickly, we had a COVID-related lockdown. And the first time I actually met her was at the 9/11 memorial event where she was doing the taping for us. So approximately 6 months later. So thank you for all your work. Kathy, thank you for the presentation. Always good to see that we have an opportunity to pivot into items that still provide community spirit and community pride and all of the opportunities that the community has to step up and show the fact that they love Grover Beach. So let's see if we have any questions. We'll start with Council Member Lance.
First of all, welcome, Madison. I know it's been a while since you joined, but it's nice to see you and meet you virtually. I'm excited about all the events that we're doing, albeit virtual. I think it's great that we're still trying to engage the community, and I thank you for kind of putting creative caps on and to do that in the best way possible. Prizes always, you know, act as a motivator for people, so I think that's great, especially the kiddos. I love the roller skating. I think that's just the coolest thing and thing that I see a lot of other people doing. So I love that. And I don't really have any questions, just props for getting creative and seeing where we can go virtually with this. And
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Next up, we'll go to Council Member Shaw.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I think it's so great to see some fun things coming up. One thing, and I don't know if I missed it in the presentation, but I'm always looking at your website. I think you're also going to have a high-intensity workout class or something at 16th Street Park? Or I don't know if you want to tell people about that.
You know, it actually did not get completely off the ground, and we didn't get enough minimum registrations, so we weren't able to be able to fully offer that. But we're still trying, and we do have some other classes in the pipeline we're working on. We don't want to make any promises yet, but we do have a lot more coming up.
Okay. Yeah, I would have signed up for that one, but it was just hard during dinner time, but I thought that sounded really good. I just want to thank you all for what you all do and work on. And I know last year, my daughter won a ribbon in the pumpkin decorating contest. And she had to write an essay in school this year. What was the proudest moment of your life? And this was, the whole essay was about, my mom said that I would never win, and then I won, and I was so happy. And so, you know, like the things you do really make a difference to people. Like, I really didn't even know that she was that proud of herself. So I just want to thank you guys. You're bringing people joy at a time we really need it. So thank you.
Very nice. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, do you have any questions or comments?
Thank you. Yes. As a matter of fact, I do have a question, and that is regarding the pumpkin carving. who can participate in that pumpkin carving contest?
That's actually open to all ages, and we have the 6 and under is decorated only. And then we have the age categories on broken down from there, and you can go on our website or our Facebook and see the categories, and I think it's in the staff report too, the exact categories and then how they can compete. But the over under 6 is that's the only one that we say decorate only.
Okay. I guess I should have been more specific. For example, my grandchildren, they're in Arroyo Grande, and I participate in their at-home education. So, and probably there are other people that do the same thing. Can I take pumpkins there and have them decorate, even though they don't live in Grover Beach?
Yeah, we actually did agree that this will be a 5 cities contest this year since it's virtual.
Okay, and swell. That's a 5 cities.
We will accept pumpkins from the 5 cities. We are limiting the house decorating contest to Grover Beach.
Right. That's good to know. You know, because I know that people came from all over when it wasn't virtual. That's good to know. I love, now I'm talking about my comments. I just love the Halloween decorating contest. That is very exciting. The kids are really excited, so they're gonna come over here and decorate my front door and so on. So that's gonna be very exciting. I just love that idea. And I want to say hello to Madison. I read all about you in the Grover Gazette today. So nice to meet you virtually. Hopefully we'll meet you in person soon.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
I think those were my only questions, but thank you so much for, you know, being as creative as you are and doing the fun things that you do. And I too, when I saw that roller skating class, man, I wanted so bad to be able to do that, but I don't have roller skates and I wasn't going to go get some, but maybe next time. But anyway, thanks again so much for all you guys do. It's helpful to make things fun because we need a little bit of fun in our lives right now. So thanks. Thumbs up.
And that's a great comment to end on this presentation is, yes, parks make life good or make, I know there's a appropriate statement in there that I've just messed up, but parks make life good. And so I know having started with the Parks and Rec Commission, it's a group of people that bring fun to our city and bring people that visit our city a good and enjoyable time. And I know we're all missing the sizzling summer concert series and all of our outdoor events, but the fact that we can kind of transition virtually and keep that interconnectivity of people's spirits and their minds together and active is a great thing, and we appreciate the service that you're doing on behalf of all the community and the 5 cities. So I'll check in with our city clerk Sims and see if there's any members of the public that have joined us by calling in at 805-321-6639 for public comment on this item.
No, there's no one on the line.
Okay, very good. So I'm just going to tease Madison very quickly and see if she's the owner of the yellow roller skates, since she had a bright yellow water cup.
No, that was actually Emily. She from City Hall. She's taking our class and absolutely loves it. And she's all color coordinated. She even had, I think, a yellow mask and the yellow scrunchie. She planned it all out.
Very nice. Okay, so color coordination is a big thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, very nice. So I'll let either Madison or Kathy, any closing comments on this item? And you are still muted.
Just wanted to thank the council for your support and also to recognize Madison. We're fortunate to have her and her creative and graphic skills, and we'll have a lot more of that coming forward as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. So with that, we'll close that item, and that completes our our business section for this evening. So I will just take a moment and see under public communications at 805-321-6639 and check in one more time with our city clerk and see if anyone has joined us for public comments.
No, we have no one on the line for public comment.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and bring it back to the council for our council committee reports. Let's see. Councilmember Lance, do you have any committee reports to share this evening?
I do not. Water Resources Advisory Committee was canceled, and I did not attend our Grover Beach Steering Committee on Friday. I was en route to the Midwest, but city manager probably. If there's any portable activity from that.
Okay. No worries there. So let's check in with Councilmember Shaw, see what committee assignments she wants to update us on.
I didn't have any committee meetings. We were all just busy the 1 week with the League of Cities conference. So I'll just report on that. I think it was a successful conference. We didn't have a Channel Counties Division meeting during the conference. We're going to try to set one up for November. But I also do want to highlight Mayor Lee's presentation on Newport Avenue. I thought it was awesome. And it was really good to hear Pismo and Paso also talk about some pretty cool road projects, too. So, but that was all I had. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll check in with Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see what committee she needs to update us on.
Thank you. Well, first off, I agree with my colleague. It was an excellent presentation by Mayor Lee and City Manager Pismo and Mayor from Paso. It was very informative and really quite entertaining. So you did an excellent job. Yes, I did. I just had one meeting, and that was a slow cog meeting. There were a couple of things. We walked through the process of developing the 2023 Regional Transportation Plan, and that's to develop a 20-plus year blueprint for achieving a balanced multimodal transportation system. The plan has to demonstrate how we will reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 11%. Per capita over the 2005 levels. Then the regional housing funds, REAP funds, Regional Early Action Planning. Those funds were allocated to two projects. One, $158,000, was a regional ADU, additional dwelling units, right? Okay.
Accessory dwelling units.
Thank you. Keepers, creepers. Yeah, accessory dwelling units. These were pre-approved standard construction plan, and this was a joint effort by the great city of River Beach, Arroyo Grande, Atascadero, and Morro Bay. And then the second was a $50,000 to transportation efficiency analysis that will support the county's regional housing and infrastructure plan. Then the remainder of the funds is going to be split between the jurisdictions. So everybody gets like an extra, I think, $5,000 or maybe not quite $5,000. And then there was one item of note from the legislative update, and that is there is a concern that the state is not going to fund projects in the future that expand capacity of the roadway system. So that could really impact what we have now on the books for our future projects for the Slow Cog program. Anywho, so that's kind of a bummer, downer, that it's just the way things are changing. They just don't want to increase the roadways. They want alternative types of transportation, alternative types to move people, rail, transit. They don't want more lanes, more cars. They want other types of transportation. So that's the scoop there. That's all I have.
Well, thank you. Certainly. Was that Councilmember Shaw?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about our 101, because I know I've always heard different updates that someday there might be a third lane. And then I saw something in the paper that it might be contemplated by like 2025. I don't know. Do you know more that you could tell people about that?
Well, they, as I understand it, they are doing an outreach, because I believe that is something that will happen. But that lane is not going to go very far. It's just going to get past the Shell Beach off ramp. You know, Jeff probably knows more about that than I do, since he was on Slow Cog for a lot longer than I was. But that's what I know about that. But that's really just, I think, to decrease that clog that comes up that hill. Mayor, do you know more about that?
Yeah, I was going to say, but Mayor Pro Tem Bright has it right. But I also am hearing a kind of an interim project to almost be like an auxiliary lane during a peak hour traffic only. I think I heard a presentation the other day by a gentleman from Caltrans, where they're anticipating putting in not a HOV lane or high occupancy vehicle lane, but more of a refuge lane for people during high traffic periods from the Shell Beach Road straight to just past the intersection there, as they're working on that more permanent fix. So I don't know when they're going to start work on that, but it sounded like it was much closer than 2025 with the more permanent fix being in that time frame. So hopefully we'll see that come in the more near future.
Let's hope so.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other committee reports, Councilmember Wright?
No, that was it for me. Thank you.
Very good. Certainly. Then I did just have one, and that is the South Slough Sanitation District, and no significant new items on the agenda. It was just more of a confirmation and some updates on the redundancy project, which is currently out to bid. It is in hands of the five pre-qualified bidders to provide pricing and proposals by November 10th. So there is only just a couple weeks from before that bid does close. Looking at a good bidding environment, hopefully, and with a possible award of that contract right around the first meeting of January. So construction should start as early as first quarter next calendar year. So with that, I'll turn it over to our League of California Cities reports. Thank you all for the kudos on the Newport presentation. It was fun to tape. City Manager Lewis was the presenter for Pismo, and in our initial taping a run through, he kind of did some jokes to kind of lighten up the mood, and so we just kind of were playing off the competitiveness of, shall we say, of three communities, which was a lot of fun to see what each of us had done and how we had all gone through the process to get some great results for the community. So with that, though, I'll turn it over to Councilmember Shaw to see if there's other updates on the League of California Cities event.
Those, I mostly gave my updates. The one thing I did want to say in regard to the general resolution, there was one general resolution contemplated, if you all recall, about whether or not we should send a letter requesting that internet companies like Facebook or Instagram take more responsibility for criminal activity than they're taking now. And I think in our discussion, we had thought it was kind of broadly worded, and we decided not to vote, just take no position. And it was pretty contested because of the wording, but then many people thought it was very necessary. Many people had First Amendment concerns. I talked about it and looked at it during the General Resolutions Committee. But Jeff ended up having to go somewhere during the voting. So I was our backup voter, but as someone who we said we weren't taking a position, so I never got a login. I guess it was in my spam. So I didn't log in because I wasn't taking a position, but it turned out they were two people short of having a quorum to even vote on it. So I guess I should have logged in to take no position, but they didn't really make us aware of that. And I guess a lot of other people weren't either. So the resolution passed, but because it passed with no quorum, it's more viewed as advisory. So I'm not even really sure what happens with it. So sorry, I didn't do the best job of being our voting person, but it really wasn't clear. The directive wasn't clear. So we were too short, not one of the quorum. So I don't take full responsibility, but yeah, I just want to update you on that.
Well, definitely appreciate that update, and thank you for taking over my voting position. I did have an opportunity switching into council communications. I did have an opportunity to speak to the South County Chamber leadership class at that time. I was the backup speaker. I was the player to be named later after the featured speaker of City Manager Bronson. So I had an opportunity to hear about 5 or 10 minutes of his speech, and everyone was asking great questions as of him as they did of me as well. So other council communications, let's see. Miriam, do you have council communications do you want to share?
No, I cannot think of any at this time. Oh, well, actually, at the Grover Beach Library, we are having a book sale this Saturday starting at 8 a.m. And it's our first book sale in a long time. We're going to have all the make it very COVID safe. We want people to wear masks. We'll have extra masks there if they forget, even though the sale's outdoor in the library parking lot. And we've started something new. Every child that comes will get a free children's book. And if you're with a nonprofit, you just come and you let the people working the desk know, and you can take books for free for your nonprofit. So we really just want people to get some books. So this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 3.
Very good. Thank you. Councilmember Lance. Desi, any council communications to share?
Not really. I'll just say that my neighbors are very happy about our new sidewalk near us. So thanks again to staff for that. People using it, and we've used it. So that's the sidewalk by Grover Beach Elementary. So thanks. That's all.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any council communications to share?
I received several from folks in the Nacimiento area thanking us for reviewing their street and for the action that we took to have staff come back with some more information on that street. So I just wanted to let you all know if you all weren't copied, that they were listening and they are very appreciative. And that's
very
about
good.
It.
Thank you. Okay. Very good. Thank you for that. So I shared my council communications earlier. So let's go ahead and turn it over to our city manager for any reports and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, just three quick items. First, just a reminder that the next scheduled council meeting is November 16th. Where we will have the housing element update adoption and the Ramona Park Master Plan adoption on the agenda, among other items. Second, we heard the phrase earlier, investments equals results. And there are a number of ways in which we've been able to do that. One of them through the sidewalk that Councilmember Lance mentioned earlier. We're just about done with the Safe Route to Schools grant-funded sidewalk on South 10th Street and Manhattan Avenue. Just a great project to be able to provide more accessibility to our community. We're also just now getting started with the Nacimiento Cross Gutter Project, which will provide a much improved drainage system and street access way on Nacimiento Avenue. And then with your action tonight on our next K14 project, we'll be starting construction on our next local residential street project beginning next month to be able to continue to move our K14 project forward across our community. And lastly, just a reminder that the elections process is underway with our drop-off box at City Hall that will operate until November 3rd, Election Day, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Our drop-off box will be available outside of City Hall. We've had over 1,000 ballots submitted to that one drop-off box since it opened up a week and a half ago. So it's definitely being well utilized. And also the in-person voting service center opens up at our community center beginning on Saturday, October 31st. Happy Halloween. Through November 3rd, Election Day, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So elections are in full swing. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. So next we'll go to our city attorney, see if he has any reports and comments tonight.
Nothing this evening, Mayor.
Very good. Then I'll go ahead and let you announce our closed session, if you would please.
I'd be happy to. Council, we're about to convene in the closed session with real property negotiators. This is in regards to a property at 603 Long Branch, City of Grover Beach, APN 060-193-020. Agency negotiators are Matthew Bronson, City Manager David Ale, City Attorney, and Bruce Buckingham, Director of Community Development. Negotiating parties are that there are multiple potential parties or potential buyers for this property. And under negotiation is consideration and discussion of price in terms of payment.
Very good. I'll do one last check with our city clerk and see if anyone has called in to make a public comment on closed session.
No, we have no one on the line for closed session.
Very good. Thank you for that. Then I will go ahead and recess us into closed session, and we'll let all those not participating in closed session wander away from our line and say thank you for all the good work that you've done this evening, and we will see you in just under a month.